one of our most important social tasks could also be one of the most difficult, asking for help. Making that request can come with a feeling of awkwardness, even dread. Turns out, though, that people are more likely to lend a hand than we might think. Our next guest says that by avoiding some common mistakes and appealing to a few basic psychological needs, we can get the help we want and need and make those helping us feel better along the way. Heidi Grant is a social psychologist who studies the science of motivation and communication. She's the senior scientist for the Neuro Leadership Institute and author of the new book, Reinforcements: How to Get People to Help You. Heidi, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Well, Heidi, I imagine a lot of people have thought, oh, it's hard to ask for help. Is that just me? And it turns out, no, it's our brains. It's part of being human. Can you talk about that?
Oh, sure. I think it's probably one of the most common experiences you can have. I was just at a conference where I asked a room full of about 2,000 people. I said, raise your hand if you've ever felt awkward asking for help. And all 2,000 hands shot up. It's really very normal to feel uncomfortable when we ask for help. And part of what I talk about in the book is that the reasons that we feel uncomfortable are based actually on a bunch of ways in which we think about help in the wrong way, or we are kind of myths that we buy into. One is that we think that other people will think less of us or will like us less if we ask them for their support. In fact, the research is really clear. People tend to like you more when they've given you help than when they haven't. So it actually is something that brings people together. It strengthens relationships. And in general, it's very satisfying for the help giver. We, again, often think about, you know, when we're asking for help, how difficult or effortful or unpleasant it will be for the person to help us. But in reality, again, what the research shows is that actually helping other people is something human beings are more or less wired to want to do. It's one of our most profound sources of well-being, of self-esteem, and positive mood. In fact, there's actually research that shows that, you know, it's really not about how much money you make or how much money you spend when it comes to making you happy. It's really about how you spend it. So money spent on other people, on gifts or charity, actually reliably leads to more happiness. And money you spend on yourself for gifts for yourself or paying your own sort of personal bills doesn't really predict happiness at all. So people are really wired to want to help. We feel great when we help. We like people more when we've helped them. And we kind of forget this somehow when we are the ones who are in need of help. And what that leads us to do is really, really radically underestimate the chances that someone else will help us. So, you know, if you look across studies, in general, people underestimate by about half the odds that someone else will help them. So other people are twice as likely or more to help us than we think they'll be.
You write that there are right ways and wrong ways to go to people and ask for help. And I'm really sorry to ask you to explain this, but apologizing on the way in is a bad way, right?
It really is. So there's a whole part of the book where I call You Made It Weird, where, you know, it would have been fine if you had just asked for the help. The person was quite likely to give it to you and probably would have felt good about giving it. But there's all kinds of things we do sometimes that actually kind of ruin it for the help giver. And so one of them is over apologizing. You know, sometimes, again, we're the ones who feel awkward. We're asking for help. So we say things like, you know, oh, I'm so sorry. I feel so terrible for asking you. You must think it's so pathetic that I need your help. And we do all this stuff in a way to kind of make ourselves feel better because we feel so awkward. But all we're actually doing is sort of ruining the experience for the other person, making them uncomfortable. You know, it's hard to give, to enjoy giving help to someone who clearly feels so awful about having asked you for it in the first place. So apologizing is not necessary and doesn't help. Another thing that we do sometimes to try to increase the likelihood or the motivation of the other person to help us is that we offer some sort of reward, right? So instead of saying, you know, will you help me complete this project? I say, well, will you help me complete the project? If you do, I'll buy you lunch. And we feel like throwing in lunch is somehow going to make them more motivated, when in fact, it just changes the motivation. So originally, I could have felt like I was helping you because I'm a good person, I'm a good friend, I'm a good colleague, and that would have been very satisfying for me. Now I feel like I'm helping you for lunch. Which now that sort of feels just like an exchange, which, you know, is the kind of thing that could happen between strangers, right? So if anything, it's sort of taking your relationship down a peg, that you feel like you have to reward me somehow for being a good colleague or a good friend. So sometimes we pile on these additional motivations, and that actually just sort of ruins it for the person who's on the receiving end.
Talking to Heidi Grant, author of Reinforcements, How to Get People to Help You. I want to ask for some individual advice for people who may have been where I was, you know, in high school and college, where there were academic advisors whose literal job was they were paid to help. And I thought, oh, I don't want to be a bother. I don't want to go ask them for help. So people in that boat, what would you say to them to say, you know, it is okay to go to someone and ask for help?
Oh, it's absolutely okay. I was one of those academic advisors for years. I was a university professor, and it was one of the more potentially rewarding things that I got to do. And I say potentially because there are a few things that can make it not very rewarding. And I think if you do these things, you're gonna be sure that you make it rewarding for that other person. One thing that's really important is that every help giver wants to feel effective. They want to see their help land. So it's really important to, when you go in and ask for someone's help, to do things like, you know, follow up with them, let them know how things turned out. Every year, professors, we have to write letters of recommendation for students that are graduating, who are wanting to go on to graduate school or medical school or a job. And you know, it's a great thing to do, and we're happy to do it, but only a small fraction of those students ever think to come back and let us know what happened, right? You know, did you actually get into the program you wanted to? And every help giver, you know, that's when you feel really good. It's when you find out that the help you gave really had an impact. So I'd say, absolutely, go to those advisors. That's their job. They're going to feel good about doing their job. They're going to feel good about helping you. They really are going to get a rich reward from it. And just, you know, do whatever you can to really follow up and let them know the positive impact you had. And another group, by the way, that we completely underestimate are people who have rejected us for help in the past. So most people would rather do just about anything than go to someone who had turned down their request for help in the past. We do this because we assume, well, if you rejected me once, you're probably going to reject me again. Again, the research is really clear. The opposite is true. If someone has rejected you once, they're actually much more likely to help you the second time around. And that's because, again, people, you know, when we say no, we feel bad typically. So when you go to that person, you're giving them an opportunity to make up for having let you down the first time, and an opportunity to strengthen or repair the relationship that might have been damaged by having to reject you the first time. So, you know, a lot of times the things that hold us back, like you're saying, I don't want to inconvenience someone, or they rejected me, they're not going to help me. You know, these are actually, our intuitions are just all wrong. And that's really why I wanted to write the book, to let people know, you know, the way we think about this stuff naturally, in many cases, it's the opposite that's true. People love to help. They want you to ask them for help, and they feel really, really good about it.
That's the individual level. How about a group, let's say a workplace or a family? How do we create a culture where everybody knows, hey, you're not on your own, you can ask for help?
Well, I think it's really important to be very so there's a couple of answers to that. One is that there's research that shows, actually a colleague of mine at NYU, Jay Van Bavel, has done research showing that when there's some really cooperative people in a group who really publicly set that example of being, you know, kind of going out of their way to be helpful to others, it tends to actually be contagious, right? So you know, if you go out of your way to be helpful to others, chances are they will go out of their way to be helpful back to you and also to other people. Human beings are really reciprocal by nature. We not even always consciously, but we tend to treat others how we've been treated. So if you want to make sure that you're getting a lot of help, it's really great to just sort of be an enthusiastic helper of other people. And I think it's also important, you know, especially if you're a leader, like if you're a manager in an organization, somebody other people are looking up to and really influenced by, to be very public about when you need help, and how getting help from other people has benefited you. Again, that sets an expectation that asking for help is okay, that we all need help. The reality is we all do. I think no one really does isolated work anymore. Very few people do that. Most of us work in teams. Most of us need other people to reach the goals that we have in our careers and in our roles. So really getting help from other people is a day-to-day thing. And if we can just really, you know, again, if you're in a position of influence, be public about that. If you want other people to help you, help them first. And these things sort of then naturally create new ways of interacting with one another.
We're talking to social psychologist Heidi Grant. Her new book is called Reinforcements, How to Get People to Help You. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have difficulty asking people for help? Have you managed to turn that around and reach out to people, or do you avoid it as much as you possibly can? Are you in a workplace where you feel like you gotta go it alone, or do you feel like, hey, when somebody puts up the bat signal, other people come and help them out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Heidi Grant, author of the new book, Reinforcements, How to Get People to Help You. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel comfortable reaching out to other people for help, or does it fill you with dread? Have you had trouble making that ask? And when people ask you for help, what makes you want to help them? What makes you feel like they're imposing? Do you ever feel that way? Or do you feel good when someone asks for your help and you are able to effectively help them? And you have questions maybe for advice for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Heidi, researching this, has this changed the way that you go about seeking help yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I was just like everyone else. I felt very, very uncomfortable asking for help. And one thing that doing some of the background research on this, I realized that I did, that's again, a really common mistake, is that I would sometimes, you know, looking for help from a bunch of my colleagues, you know, or a bunch of people at one time, I'd send one of those group emails where I say, you know, here's the help I need. Can anybody help me with this? And you send it to 5, 10, 15 people all at the same time. And then nothing happens. You know, you're lucky if any of them even respond. And doing the research on this book, I learned why that's true. So there's something that psychologists call diffusion of responsibility. That basically, the more people that can help you in any situation, the less likely anyone is to. Because no one understands in those moments whether or not they're the one that's supposed to help. You might feel like, well, somebody else on this email chain has probably responded to her by now and offered to help. I don't feel personally responsible because she just asked all of these people. So that's, I think, a really common mistake that a lot of us make. That, you know, I know why we do it. We do it because we're saving time, right? I'm going to ask all 15 people who might be able to help me. But your success rate is much higher if you send individual emails to those people, or even better, pick up a phone or ask them face to face. There's research that shows that you are 34 times more likely to get someone to say yes to your request for help if you ask in person rather than via email. It basically takes about 200, asking 200 people via email to equal the success rate of asking 6 people in person. So, you know, there's some things we do. And again, this is one of those things where, you know, the email request feels more comfortable for us, you know, the asker, right? I feel, you know, I don't have to stand there and look at you while I'm asking for help. So it might feel a little bit less awkward, but it also feels less awkward for that person to say no. So, you know, again, that sort of, that little discomfort you feel about the face-to-face request really pays off when you see how much higher the success rates are when we take the time to either ask someone in person or pick up a phone and have a live interaction when you're asking for help.
And maybe I should take a step back, because you give a kind of step-by-step way to mm-hmm. ask for help. And this one I love. Step one, the helper needs to notice that you might need help. And I think a lot of people probably have had that feeling of, I feel a little aggrieved, like, can't people see I'm overwhelmed? I'm doing all this stuff. Why isn't anybody offering to help? Well, they may not notice, or they may think they'd be bugging you if you stepped in.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of my favorite things to say, and everyone kind of always raises eyebrows, is, you know, if you're not getting the support you want, it's probably kind of your fault. And nobody likes to hear that. But what I mean by that is that there's things you're probably not doing. One of them is that you're probably assuming your need for help is obvious. And nothing could be further from the truth. We all pay attention mostly to what's happening to ourselves. We all, you know, don't notice everything that's happening around us. And people fall victim to what psychologists call the illusion of transparency. We all feel like our thoughts and feelings are obvious to other people. It's absolutely not the case. And so a lot of the time, we just fail to notice that someone might need our help because we're too busy thinking about other things. It doesn't come from selfishness. It doesn't come from unkindness. It just comes from being really kind of busy. Our brains can only manage so much. So direct requests for help are really important. And the other reason that you mentioned that a direct request is really important is that a lot of times someone might notice that you need help, but not be sure you want it.
Right.
And that's a big deal. If you've ever, you know, offered unsolicited help to someone who didn't want it and see how annoyed they get with you, you immediately learn to not do this. So that's one of the things I talk about in the book. It's so important to make those direct requests. We all wish that people would just magically help us, that they would know we needed help and they would know we wanted help so we wouldn't have to put ourselves in that position. But the reality is we really need to make explicit requests to specific people. And when we do, the success rates for getting that help are very, very high.
Let's bring in a caller to help out our conversation. Chris is with us in Darlington. Chris, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Chris?
Well, this has really been very interesting. What I run into is mostly on committee work, and I have people who will say, I can help from 2 to 3 or I can help from 4 to 5. You know, you can never get a group together because everybody's so busy. And lots of time when they do come, they just want to get it done and leave. You know, okay, I helped. I'm out of here. And so it's just easier to do it yourself.
Oh, I know how that feels. And I felt that many times before. I think one of the things that you notice is that the people, when you need their help, they don't have two possible options. They actually have three. One is that they can say no. And that's, again, very uncomfortable. People don't like to say no. It makes them feel like bad people. And then there's two versions of yes. There's the sort of the not so good yes, which is, yes, I'll do it, but I'm going to kind of do the bare minimum and I'm not really happy about it. And I'm not giving you my best. And I'm also not feeling that great. I'm not reaping those well-being and self-esteem benefits, right? Or there's the enthusiastic yes. The yes, I really want to. I feel good about it. People give you their best and they feel really, really good. And the difference between those tends to be about sort of how about their motivation. And there's some things you can do to actually shift that a bit. And one of the most powerful things you can do, especially if it's like volunteer work, committee work, is to have help people to understand how important the work they're doing is. I'll just give you one quick example. There was a study that was done looking at people who were fundraisers, and they were volunteer fundraisers who were helping to raise money at a university for a scholarship. And what the researchers did so most of the time, these people, they know they're raising money for scholarships. Yes, they know scholarships are important, but they didn't ever meet any of the scholarship recipients. They never saw the impact of their helping. And so for some of these people, they actually brought in a scholarship recipient who got to talk to them firsthand about how important the work was that they were doing and what a difference it had made in his life. And what they saw in the month that followed, people doubled and tripled the amount of time they spent on the phone and more than doubled the amount of money that they raised after having that real experience of like, wow, what I'm doing really makes a difference. So wherever we can take the time to show people, you know, the work that you've done, the time that you've spent, the cooperation you've given has really had an impact. And this is everything we've achieved, and really drawing their attention to that can really help increase their motivation to cooperate with you more. And also make make it, again, a lot more rewarding for them. You know, helping is this situation where it has the potential to be a win-win. We want the help, but we also want people to feel great about it. And sometimes that little bit of extra motivation by knowing what their impact was can make all the difference.
Chris, thanks for that call. In our last few moments, Heidi, let's flip things around and talk about the joy of being the helper. I understand if I have some complicated furniture to assemble, I should call you. How do you feel when you're able to effectively help out your friend that way?
You know, it's helping. I think we all know this. We've all had those moments of feeling really good about ourselves. What you see, again, from the research is that people have these lasting benefits of well-being. They like themselves more. So their ratings of self-esteem go up because they feel like, you know, I'm a good person. I'm a kind person. I'm a person that acts in accordance with my values. And you see, like I said, a lot of differences in mood. So, you know, there's research that shows that people in a good mood will tend to want to be helpful because they want to keep that good mood going. And people in a bad mood actually sometimes use being helpful to others as a way to lift their spirits. So I think, you know, the joy of helping is really tangible. In fact, there are very few things that make human beings, give them a greater sense of lasting happiness than help. There are very few things that give us greater connectedness to others and strengthen our relationships more. And so that's really, again, the point of the book is to sort of unleash all of these people out into the world who have been wanting help, have been wishing they had more help, and I'm giving you all permission. Please go and ask for that help because you're going to make a lot of happy people in the world, including yourself.
It's a great place to leave it, Heidi. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
I've been talking to Heidi Grant, social psychologist. She's the author of the new book, Reinforcements, How to Get People to Help You. Still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe your experiences. Did you have that positive experience that Heidi was just talking about where you helped someone close to you, or maybe even a total stranger and felt pretty good about it afterwards? You can let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.